the SNL Hall of Fame podcast with chief conversationalist Bill Kenny, featuring Matt Ardill, with special guest Kirsten Rajala. And now, curator of the hall, your host, JD.
Thank you so much, Kirk Lane. It is an absolute pleasure to be here with you inside the SNL Hall of Fame, these hallowed halls. Now, as I reach in my pocket to pull out my keychain with the rabbit foot on it, I know it's an ethical rabbit foot, though. Wipe your feet and meet me inside. The SNL Hall of Fame podcast is a weekly affair where each episode we take a deep dive into the career of a former cast member, host, musical guest, or writer and add them to the ballot for your consideration. Once the nominees have been announced, we turn to you, the listener, to help decide who will be enshrined for perpetuity inside the hall. And that's how we play the game. It's just that simple. I hope you have enjoyed this season, the seventh and final season of the SNL Hall of Fame. It's been our pleasure to bring it to you. And this week, as always, I am going to go and talk with my friend Matt Ardill in the trivia corner.
Okay, I am walking down the hallway with a pair of skis over my shoulder because, well, I'm heading skiing after this. There's no joke here. I'm going skiing right after this interview with Matt. So take it or leave it. That's what's happening. Okay.
Matt. All right, JD, remember, I'm good. And remember, pizza for slow, French fries for fast. Slow, French fries fast. So ready to hear a bit about one of my favorite of the newer cast members, Cecily Strong?
I would love to. Yeah, I love Cecily Strong.
Everybody loves Cecily. She's just an amazing talent. 5'8", born February 8th, 1984, in Springfield, Illinois. She was raised in the Oak Park suburb of Chicago. Her uncle was a Broadway producer and developed an early love of the stage musical, which is made quite obvious in her Schmegadoon series on Apple Plus. He would get her tickets to Broadway shows and then bring her backstage to meet the cast. She attended Oak Park and River Forest High School before being expelled for having weed. She was a bit of a bad girl. She was then sent to a private Catholic school before transferring to Chicago Academy of the Arts and graduating in 2002 to go on and attend CalArts for acting, where she graduated with a BFA in theater. She returned to Chicago, studying at Second City, IO, and UCB. She has 35 acting credits, one producer credit, and one writing credit. She cut her teeth in improv hell, part of the Second City road cast, spending 4 months doing improv on a cruise ship.
Oh, wow.
Which, that's a rough, rough room. And there's no getting away when you're yes, and some of those bad suggestions. She also performed in Sketchfest, Just for Laughs Chicago, Edinburgh Fringe, and many more prestigious events. She has hosted the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which was extra special to her because her father was an Associated Press bureau chief and has been a strong supporter of her career.
She is special.
Yeah, she has done ad campaigns for Old Navy and recently did a makeup campaign that was part of the SNL anniversary series. She published her memoir, This Will Be Over Soon, which discussed her life during the pandemic. She has performed off-Broadway in Jane Wagner's one-woman show, The Search for Intelligent Life in the Universe, which had previously starred comedy icon Lily Tomlin, and has since gone on to hold a role in another off-Broadway production, Brooklyn Laundry. Plus, my friend Andrew met her briefly when she popped into a UCB class while he was in Chicago studying at the UCB. So I am very jealous of Andrew. She is quoted as saying, there's much more bad information than good out there. Everybody's got something to say, and it's usually wrong.
Except for you, Matt Ardell. What you have to say is right. And we are going down to the conversation room right now with our good friend, Kristen Rajala, who will be telling us even more about Cecily Strong. Bill is cross-legged for some reason and meditating. I'm not sure. This might be just what he does. Take it away, Bill Kenny.
Yes, thank you, JD and Matt. Welcome into the conversation. My name is Bill, and today we have a very recent member of the SNL cast, someone who we're going to have so many superlatives to throw her way, I'm sure. Dominated the show for over a decade with our pals Kate and Adie. Of course, I'm talking about Cecily Strong, and there's only one person that I can think of that could come in and talk about Cecily. And that's Kristen Rajala. How are you?
I'm great. And I appreciate you saying that because I admire her so much. She is a formidable woman. I think we probably took her a little for granted on the show because she was always there and always delivering. But gosh, do we miss her? She left a Cecily-sized hole in the cast. And although everyone is great, she really was something special and had a really strong female voice that I appreciate to the end.
Absolutely. Yeah, you think about any other era, she would have been talked about like a Kristen Wiig or a Gilda Radner. But because she's on, we had an embarrassment of riches for this decade with these three amazing women who took over the show. I do think she gets overlooked sometimes, and we'll take care of that today, Kristen.
Yes, we will.
So what have you had going on? I know you're over at the Saturday Night Network, but what other plugs would you like to talk about?
I am, busy, not a complaint. I love my day job. I also have a very fun event series I do with my bestie 4 times a year. It seems serendipitous that we're talking about Cecily and being a strong female voice because it's called Generation Woman, and it's a storytelling event that's 4 times a year. Now, I do it in Toronto, but there are chapters in the United States. So if you check out Generation Woman because you want to support female voices and intergenerational storytelling, you probably do, I'm assuming, if you're here, then please check that out and support not just my show, but all of the different shows that happen across the world.
Yeah, you do such great work, and you do such great work over at the SNN. And I've missed being on with you. We haven't been on in quite a while.
I
so
know.
We need to talk to John about that.
We do. I'll send him a message.
Yes. But yeah, so Cecily, I mean, she comes in, as we said, around season 38. She only has one season as a featured player. This is one of the last times we see this. Her and Adie both are bumped up the next year. And she's really coming in at the end of that third golden era. A lot of people have left. Kristen and Andy have just left. We still have Fred, Jason, Bill Hader, got a couple years left in them. But yeah, it's a transition year, but not a bad transition year when she comes in. And she immediately out of the gates dominates the show. Stays for 11 years and just as you said, has such a strong voice, a strong female voice, has one of the best finales for her career on SNL, which we'll get into a little bit later. But yeah, from season 38 to 48, Cecily Strong, just a dominant, dominant cast member. What are your first memories of Cecily coming onto the show, Kristen?
Well, let me just say, I think she could have been on in any era. I think she's classic and timeless in that way with the range of impressions and character she does, her singing talent. So I love that she got bumped up after just 1 year. It's probably why so many featured players are nervous because they know it's possible. Right. And then someone, a Cecily comes along and does that after just 1 year and you think, oh boy. I mean, what's funny is I think of her more as just like, in total, all of the characters she does, I'm trying to remember when she even broke on. I just feel like she's omnipresent, like she's always been in the building.
Yeah. And it's really interesting going back and looking at her work over the last couple of weeks to prepare for this, seeing how much she had on. So to put you back in 2012, which I would like to go back to in a couple of different ways, but this, you know, Kate comes in at the end of 37. Everybody knows Kristen's leaving. It's almost like she's supposed to be a replacement, fairly or unfairly. So she starts off a little bit earlier than both Cecily and 80. The next year, Cecily, 80, and Tim Robinson come in, but Cecily, right out of the gates, has a piece on Weekend Update, the very first episode, gets on Weekend Update Thursday, which was a thing back then, debuts a popular character that we'll get into. And if you look at her first season, Kirsten, I think this is one of the best first seasons we've ever had in the history of SNL.
Yeah, I mean, she brings the gravitas of a Jan Hooks, the fearlessness of Gilda, and as we get to know her characters, the eyeliner of someone who's seen it all. She's a triple threat in that respect.
Yeah. And so starting right out, this is an unknown character, I think, in today's memories of Cecily, but Mimi Morales, she does in the very first episode. I had to go back and watch this, Kirsten. I had no memory of this at all. She does this in the very first episode. She's courting the Latino votes for Barack Obama. So everything 2012 is right there for you. But as I said, like to get a piece on Weekend Update in your very first episode with a very strong and big cast is really a testament to what she was able to do right from the beginning.
Yep, absolutely.
So is there a character or a piece that you would like to talk about as we start off talking about her career?
I think one of the, gosh, she did so much so well. I think people will remember a lot of her Weekend Update work because she really stood out there. It was hers even after she left. You know, this is post co-anchoring, right? You know, the girl you wish you hadn't started a conversation or a party with, instant classic. Jeanine Pirro with the wine barrel, that is Hall of Fame content. And she really did turn that desk into her own, like, one-woman cabaret. It was, you know, sometimes when folks come on and Weekend Update, I get a little nervous. I'm like, ooh, what are they going to do? And I never had that with her. There was always this, you know, implicit confidence that she was going to do something amazing. And she exceeded us and our expectations many times there. But if I have to pick one, let's pick Conversation, because that one was back in the 50th, right? Girl, you...
That's right.
Let me say it right here. It is the girl you wish you hadn't started a conversation with at a party. That's her title. That's the name of her character.
Yes. One of the longest titles in SNL history. Yeah, she does this, canonically, she does this for the first time in episode 6 of 38. But as I said, they were doing Weekend Update Thursdays back then for the election, kind of trying to catch the heat of the Obama election. And so this was after her second episode where she did this on Weekend Update Thursday. People probably didn't have any idea who she was. And yeah, she does this a total of 12 times, including, as you said, Kirsten, at the 50th. What a badge of honor. And gets her happy ending, running off with Drunk Uncle. But yeah, this is a great one. And her ability to do malpropisms, to mix up her words. Now, it's something, you mentioned Gilda. That's one of the things that Gilda was very good at with Emily Latella. She does this with a couple of different characters, but I think it's most obvious with this one.
So are you excited about the holidays?
Excited? I'm repulsed, Seth. All this commercialism around Christmas, it's an outrage. It's a tragedy. It's like, what are we even doing? And like, why? And like, don't.
No, you really seem like you're in the Christmas spirit.
You mean the Christmas spirit? Oh, right. You don't care about Jesus because you worship Hallmark.
Oh, boy.
She's trying to take a stand. trying to hold the anchor, whether it's Che or Jost or Seth Meyers, to task for whatever, the environment or women's rights. And she just can't get the words out right because she's just so bubble-headed. And, you know, just goes on and on. Love this character.
Absolutely. Full-blown art form here. Yeah. I mean, somehow she made this character both insufferable but also endearing, which is a really hard balance to achieve. You know, there was complete emotional whiplash from like shallow to self-righteous in 2 seconds. Chef's kiss.
Yes.
And I've got to say, I think she played drunk better than anyone since Phil Hartman.
Yeah. I mean, Bobby might take you to task for that. But yeah, you're... But then they got together.
Real drunk. Yeah. Yes. Marriage made in heaven. There you go. Like sloppy, unpredictable, but always controlled.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
This is a great, great debut for her. I mean, again, right at the beginning of her career, very early on that she's able to do this. Your point about Update is very well taken because, you know, we'll probably say this a few times as far as Mount Rushmore. She's probably on the Mount Rushmore of people on Update outside of, you know, the anchors. As far as correspondence, people coming to the desk, she has to be up there, Kirsten.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm going to save Goober for a hot minute because there's still so much to mine here. Kathy Ann, the raspy voice, the cigarette, the deeply specific backstory. Like, she was a mess.
She
was kind of our mess. And she, interestingly, for such a character that seemed like she'd have nothing to talk about, managed to channel the chaos of American politics through a character that you could walk down your street and see arguing with her mailbox.
Let me tell you something. This man held people's paychecks hostage for 35 days for that wall. And then he caved and he's pretending like he won. You didn't win. Just like when I held a bathroom hostage at Arby's for 2 days. I didn't leave because I won, okay? I left because they threw a smoke bomb through the window and my jeans caught fire. He never got his wall, and I never got to hear Ving Rhames say, "We have your meat, Kathy Ann."
That's all you wanted?
Hey, stay focused.
Okay.
Now, she starts in a couple of sketches. She's like Stefan. We see her in sketches before we see her at the Update desk. But it is, when you see her, your mind goes to, she's just going to be this white trash person who doesn't really have a good opinion about anything, but actually her opinions are pretty strong for a crack addict who's a recovering alcoholic.
Yes, yes. There was more than meets the eye to that character, which I really think sums up so much of the way she approached things. And I don't think there's no right or wrong way to be successful on this show. And I think all of us love Andy Samberg and his obsession with, you know, fart jokes and stuff. There is room for everyone. But what I do love about her, and since this is about her and the Hall of Fame, is there was, like, she never played a character, she became them. And there was this real commitment to a depth of characterization that is probably the balance we need with fart jokes, right? Like, I mean, we want it all. And she was the one who brought that. And I'd say that even, you know, like, let's be real, not every sketch is a gem. But there was so much dignity in her performance, even if the writing or whatever it else let us down, like, she never phoned it in. She was also, you know, with a look, a pause, a whatever, like, you could count on her. And I say that about a lot of people, but I'm really underlining that here, that she was, I imagine if you're a writer or someone on the show, like her or Keenan, you're like, oh, I can rest for a moment. They got this.
Yeah. I think with Kathy Ann, the thing with her is she is making her point, but she's also so self-deprecating. I think of the one where she comes on after the insurrection and she's talking about all these guys who are, you know, rushing the Capitol and how they thought they were the master race. And she's like, master race? When I wake up in a dumpster, I don't consider, geez, I'm part of the master race. Like, she always brought it back to all of her faults while she was bashing whoever she was bashing. So, you know, she kept it even in a way that I think very few characters have in the history of the show.
Yep. I wonder what it was. I mean, I've got to ask John and like any of you that get to interview some of the writers and people involved on the show, what it was like to write for some of these people, because I'd be curious about their take on what it was like to write for her, because I've got a sense that, you know, there's got to be some cleverness, and it's got to be pretty smart, intelligent writing for her, because she's worthy of it, and it's become a bit of her brand.
Yeah. So you mentioned her being an update anchor. So this is an interesting blip in her career. But it was her decision. She came out later on and said she was starting to see that she wasn't going to be able to do all the characters she wanted to do, be in all the sketches she wanted to be in. It's a very different show than it was even 30 years ago, where, you know, weekend update anchors were in a lot of sketches at the same time as being an anchor. So her year at the desk is very interesting. She spends half of it with Seth and half of it with this fresh-faced guy named Colin Jost. I wonder whatever happened to him. But I think she did really well at the desk, Kirsten, as an update anchor, even if she didn't want to continue to go down that path.
I agree. I remember when that happened, and I think I must have known at the time that she wanted to. I remember thinking, oh, well, are we still going to get her in all of the sketches? And that was a concern. And I mean, I'm kind of glad that she felt the same way, because that would have been a loss to the sketches.
Yeah.
But she held her own. I mean, she's got that polished ability to come off as an anchor, but she was better served in character and as an impressionist and as a singer and all of the other great things that she does.
Absolutely. I always thought of her very Jane Curtin-esque as an anchor.
Yeah.
I think she, as you said, very polished, very able to deliver the joke, not smirk through it, not, you know, make references to what's being said. And I like it. And one side note with this, it's the last time we hear Don Pardo introduce Weekend Update anchors was with Cecily and Colin Jost. So he passed away the summer after she decided to do it. To stop doing it. So that's one of the last times we hear his voice on the show. So just a fun little side note with that. But yeah, I mean, the only other character I think for Weekend Update, unless there's another one that you have in mind, is her one-dimensional female character, Heather, where every character in a movie, the one-dimensional female character. Do you remember this one, Kirsten?
Yeah. That's more of a deep cut, isn't it? Blonde wig, push-up bra, Hollywood lazy tropes, very satirical. Yes, yeah. And again, see, having a POV on something, not coming in and just playing a floozy, but exposing some of, you know, the Hollywoodisms. Like, there was always, you know, she was going to shiv you at the end with some of the smartness of the writing.
Yes, absolutely. So any sketches that stand out as we move away from the update desk that you want to talk about?
You know, a dear favorite of mine is her character, Gemma, because it encapsulated an entire era of kind of Britpop, in my mind as a Canadian, WAGs, right? Wives and girlfriends of the assortment of the UK celebrity system type folks. And absolutely nailed both the accent, the wardrobe, the mannerisms, the lifestyle, and the freaking pop songs that she wrote and performed. Oh my gosh. Gemma. I just have to say that. It makes me happy.
I'm sorry, babe. I'm such a big bag of freaking meatballs. Hey, did I introduce you to my girl?
Hi, I'm Gemma.
Yes, we did this.
Yeah, she's British. They tell you who, tell them who used to date.
Footballers.
Isn't that hot, footballers? Makes you think about what she might do with her foot to your boys. Ain't that right, Jean?
Babe, I want some nibbles. Get some, babe.
Oh, she means apps. She says nibbles. Hey, say it again.
Nibbles.
Yeah, and if you don't remember this one, they did this 6 times somehow, which is bananas. But Keenan and Vanessa were a couple who were usually out on a date. And Gemma shows up with her boyfriend of the week. It was The Rock at one point, Jason Momoa, always these buff dudes. And the guy that she's with always knows Keenan's character. Keenan never remembers them until they get very, very specific about whatever it was that they ran into each other. And yeah, Cecily just does this so well. It's that cockneyed British accent that we don't get enough of on SNL these days. And she's just an airhead. She's sitting there talking about the one she got a brand new vagina today. She thinks that Keenan is the brother of his wife at one point, or his girlfriend. At that point, it had switched to Leslie Jones instead of Vanessa. Vanessa had left the cast. But so she's very confused and eventually wants to sing. And as you said, sings very, very shitty songs.
Yep. You know what? There's a trend here, right? Which it's probably going to be obvious to a lot. But yeah, she did this 6 times and she did Conversation Girl at a Party, I think you said 13 times. I never got bored of these characters and they never felt repetitive. It wasn't one trick pony type, like let's, you know, just put a new hat on this character and have them come out and do the same shtick. Right. And that was the beauty of it, is that there was always something new to discover. You know, recurring characters are comfort food, but you still need a little bit of something to keep it interesting. And she always did.
She always did. And that's a great point, because I think that's something that we still complain about today with certain characters that are brought back, and it's paint by numbers. It's the same exact scene. They're in the same exact place. They move this around, and they did this with a lot of Cecily's characters. Whenever there was the opportunity, put it in a different situation where it's not A to B to C, and we've already seen this 6 times. And she always brought a freshness to everything she did. Kirsten, one of the ones I love, and this is early on for her too, that she did with Bobby, was the firings. So she had worked at McDonald's and Best Buy and Barnes & Noble, and they're sure they're going to be the two fired. They've gathered. This is the early parade sketches when we have 17 cast members. They have almost the entire cast on stage, and the manager, usually played by the host for that week, is telling them bad news. There's cuts or somebody who's been stealing something, and Cecily and Bobby always jump to the conclusion that it's them and eviscerate everybody who's an employee, a coworker of theirs. Are you a fan of these?
That was a great combo. Yes, great combo. Memorable to a lot of people because of how they broke Kevin Hart.
Yes.
I believe in one of these, which, you know, there are some people that are hard to break, but when they broke him, amazing. I love these characters, and it was such an interesting mashup with those two coming together. I need to go rewatch those because they're so good. Thank you for reminding me. I need to put that on my list. I'm trying to remember what their names were.
They were Dana and Niff. Niff.
Oh my gosh.
For some reason. Sure.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, I mean, these people that they've probably been working with for quite a while, and they just have the worst things to say about them. And then of course, they're not the ones being fired anyway. The Kevin Hart one is very famous for breaking him in the Barnes & Noble. But yeah, I love this one.
Yep. And then there's, Dana, that's right. There are some characters like Girlfriend's Talk Show, and Kira? And she's kind of this, you know, Kira, this tween teen with a really creepy boyfriend.
Yes.
Who likes to watch her, but the way she delivers those lines is insane. And you know, you look at someone with her, 80 is playing a great character who's just desperate to be her friend. Cecily is, you know, ignorant of that to a degree and has this creepy boyfriend. I mean, there's so much character work going on, but it all works together, which is a sign to me of like well established experienced performers.
Yes.
Who can perfectly share the spotlight and work in an ensemble, but still have characters that stand on their own 2 feet and stand out.
Oh my God. Hi. Welcome to Girlfriend's Talk Show.
This is a show we just sit and talk like girlfriends do. This is my best friend, Morgan.
Hi. And this is my best friend, Kira.
What up?
And
I don't know who this girl is.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is a new best friend of mine, Tara.
Hi, it's so good to see you again.
Yeah, I know. And like, look at you. You're the coolest.
You look real cool, too. I'm so glad we became best friends.
Yeah, how many best friends do you have, Kira?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people that could relate to this, whether you have daughters or, you know, you can remember being this age. But 80 is always the awkward one, and Cecily's kind of moved on from that. She's either bringing in, as you said, the creepy boyfriend or the, you know, the hot friend that she just made at school. Scarlett Johansson's in one of them, and she's kind of trying to drift away from 80. While not be hurtful to her. And she's clueless. She just likes to say awesome. And 80's always trying to direct the conversation back to something much more pure, or like which boys they think are cute. And the Cecily character is just becoming more mature in front of her eyes. So,
I mean, it's grade seven. It's grade seven completely.
Yeah. My boyfriend's crazy.
Yeah. He likes me to dress up and whatever. Yeah. Another deep cut character. There were only two of these made, and it's Donna Fingerneck. And these were the instructional videos, The Art of the Encounter and Women in the Workplace. And they are just so ridiculously stupid and delightful. And there are only a very small few SNL women that could have played this character the way she did. So if anyone needs a refresher, that's a deep cut. 2013, 2014 timing. She did two of these videos as Donna Fingerneck.
What a great name. Yeah. I haven't watched these in a while. So, but I do need to go back and watch those, but
oh yeah.
Yeah. These great characters.
Yeah.
You mentioned her singing a little bit earlier, and be remiss not to bring up all of the great work that Cecily and all the other female cast members would do around this era. So they did a lot of pre-tapes where they did This Is Not a Feminist Song, Do It on My Twin Bed. Are any of these like super favorites of yours, Kirsten?
Oh my, I mean, all of those are, they're all so good. She was always the go-to singer for sure. There was a moment too, because she overlapped with Bowen, where you thought, here's a match made in heaven, because they both love to ham it up. And they did get some time in together. Taryn Killam, who she would sing a lot with. But yes, some of the videos that the women were producing, the pre-tapes in that era, are absolute classics. And they were neck and neck with some of the stuff that the guys were doing. That is a distinct memory of that time for me. Let's do it in my twin bed.
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple thousand dollars in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/affirmations or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/affirmations.
It just reminds me, as someone who's watched the show for 40 years, like I can remember season 16, 17, where they only had one female cast member. One.
Yeah.
I mean, to fast forward 20 years and be able to have 6, 7, 8 female cast members completely crushing it in pre-tapes like this. The guys aren't even a factor in them. Like in This Is Not a Feminist Song, The only one you see is Beck, and he's pushed out of screen about 5 seconds after he gets on. Do It on My Twin Bed. I mean, Fallon's in it. Well, the guy, there's a bunch of guys in it, but
yeah,
they don't
They're
have
arm candy.
Prominent roles. Correct.
They're arm candy. Correct. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love these, and it really shows off her singing abilities.
Absolutely. You know, I know we skipped off of Weekend Update, but we need to talk about Judge Jeanine Pirro and the wine.
Yes.
Because I think Sarah has picked up this Colin Jost, you know, bashing, teasing, whatever you want to call it. But Judge Jeanine Pirro was throwing wine in everyone's face before that. It was chaotic. It was, you know, she's literally soaking herself in red wine live on the air. And it became so funny. And we knew it was going to happen, but it still was great. And even though we knew it was going to happen, I didn't mind that I knew it was going to happen, where sometimes I'm like, here we go again. No, no, please keep filling up her glass.
Oh, Colin, please. I haven't been drinking. I currently am drinking. I have vowed to enjoy a drink every time President Trump ignores a congressional subpoena. And let me tell you, Mama is a lizard.
All right. Well, despite Trump's stonewalling, it's still likely that Robert Mueller will testify before Congress.
What?
One of the downsides, if you want to say this, of her tenure is not her fault, obviously, is that we're entering the Trump era a couple years into her. So she does play a lot of Trump era, either cabinet members. She plays two of his wives. But Jeanine Pirro is one of those, I think, that does stick out because she's this Fox News, Fox Noise, pun intended, Fox News anchor. And she does this a bunch, and she's just this screeching banshee of a woman who just, how she got this job is amazing. It really is. And Cecily plays it so well. I know one of the last times she did it, we thought that was going to be the end for Cecily. It was in the finale, I think, of 47, when they brought out the huge glass of wine for her to swim in. But yeah, the Colin bashing starts with Cecily. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. 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 I mean, she played Tulsi Gabbard, but then she played Stormy Daniels. She really did cover the spectrum there of notable, is how I'll just say it, notable people in U.S. political and pop culture.
Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, she really was.
Carrie Lake.
To play them all. Yep.
She does Rachel Maddow, too, which she did in her third episode, which was.
And did a great job. Yeah.
Great job. Yeah.
Yep.
This is a deep cut. Since we're on impressions, do you remember the Sarah Koenig impression?
I was just going to say that, and I thought it was too deep a cut.
Love that one. And if you don't remember how obsessed people were with Serial podcasts were just becoming a thing. I mean, 5-6 years in, but this overtook the nation. And when she did that Christmas one with Santa Claus, Kirsten, how great was that?
Chris says that he not only left the toy for the boy in Baltimore, but he leaves millions of toys for kids around the world. And he does it in one night. I know. Shocking, right?
You know, it's like you said you hit every house. I mean, like, you understand that's hard for people to swallow, right? You know what I mean?
Look, I don't know how it works. You know, you're either going to believe in me or not, but I know it's real, okay?
Chris would get like this sometimes, about the more unbelievable parts of a story. But I guess he was right. How do you explain these things?
And everything from the kind of ASMR audio, like they just nailed the vibe of a pod, you know, and the description of it and the voice compression, all of it. That was a great one. I'm so glad you mentioned it because I thought, oh, that one feels so obscure. I'll let it go, but you brought it up. I love it.
Well, it's one of those pop culture moments because they were dropping episodes every week and it was right around Christmas time. So the fact everything just kind of came together during this. And yeah, it was just such a perfect, she's a great impressionist, not in the way that you think of somebody like Melissa Villaseñor, but she's right. able to encapsulate these different people in a way that most people wouldn't be able to do.
I agree. And if you look at the visuals of her impressions, you know, whether you're looking at stills or photos, ever, she didn't always look like the person. And, you know, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, she doesn't look like her, but she was able to nail it because, again, as you say, it was more how that person moved through the world that she was able to capture.
Yeah. So we've talked about a lot of the different cast members that she worked well with, AD and Bobby. Somebody she worked really well with, Vanessa, with the ex-porn stars. So this is such a great piece. It was usually towards the end of the night. And it was, she never had a name. I think Vanessa's character was Brookie. And Cecily would always say, "And I'm okay, thank you." Or, "And I'm under witness protection program," or something like that. And they were always trying to sell something. So they
luxury bought, products.
Luxury products. Yes. Lamborghinis.
Luxury products. Yeah.
Yeah. Manolo Blahnik. I'm sure I screwed that up, but just Moet, like they would.
Yeah. Moet and Chandon.
Right. Right. And
yeah. They, glam. It was those like little bodycon dresses and platform heels that, you know, everyone was wearing then too. Sneakily brilliant. And then they absolutely looked like they were intoxicated in a few ways. And, you know, it seems easy to play intoxicated, but if you've tried it, you'll know it isn't. And here she is doing it again, not just drunk, but this time under the influence of probably many things, probably a couple of Quaaludes. and I could have seen these characters way more, and I would like to see them again. Like, if for any reason they are listening or anyone connected and listening, just put something on Instagram, please, of these characters again. I would love to see them.
Moet Chandon champagne is bubbles and $40. Plus, it's Dom Perignon. And it's perfect for occasions like promotion, occasions, successful surgery, bubbles, ever nursery. You'll feel like you're bouncing on the face of luxury. You'll think you just graduated magnum cum laude.
I think that would be one of the first ones we would go to if we got an announcement that Cecily was going to be hosting, which, fingers crossed, will happen at some point soon. But you have to imagine that this would be on the top of everyone's list. Again, the malpropisms, they can't say the name of the product, and then they're just so confused that they're, you know, they're trying to help each other out, and they're talking like, what are those things you press down on? And she's trying to get the word petals, and she's like, testicles. Like, it's so random. And and then Cecily will drop something like, you know, "One time I thought I banged SEAL Team 6, but it was actually 16 SEALs." Like, how these people have made it through the world into assumably their 30s at this point is bananas. But here they are.
That's going to be fun to write for.
Oh, sure. And they always had a host too, right? The host comes in at the end, and did someone say Lambertini? And no, not yet, not yet. And they'd push him off the stage. This had to be something that hosts would constantly come in and ask to be
put absolutely. In. I don't know how you don't break doing that. That's why you had to have those two professionals, because they're both great at not breaking. It couldn't have been played by most other people. It's too silly.
So there's a couple other ones that I want to make sure we get to, but is there anything else that sticks out that you want to make sure that we touch on before we get into a couple of the later period, Cecily?
The one that is very near and dear to my heart, which is probably on your list, is Goober. So if that's on your list, let's jump to it.
100% is, yes. To set this up, I mean, Cecily has become the voice of reason on the show at this point, maybe the most politically driven person that we've ever had on the show, who's not afraid to talk about their opinions. Kirsten, as a woman, this much touched you in a way that I can't even comprehend.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is at first is that character, that sketch, that update piece is playing out. You know, your jaw is slowly dropping to the floor as you realize just how clever it is. You know, she brought kind of women's rage to SNL in a way that felt dangerously honest. You know, Goober the Clown had an abortion when she was 23. And this is the premise of the sketch. But this was performance art, but it was political and it was funny. It was deeply vulnerable. And she blurred the lines between comedy and truth in a way that SNL rarely does. I mean, it's, we, you know, there's satire and, you know, we laugh about things, but this felt incredibly real and raw and honest. And I would say it's a historic moment that, I'm going to say some bold stuff here. I think it transcended sketch comedy and it hit like a brick wrapped in rainbow wrapping paper. It was just so bold and brash and empowering. And, you know, I probably cried if I remember correctly, like laughed and cried.
Sure.
It went quite viral, as it should have. And I don't know if, who knows if we would ever know, if there was any type of pushback or resistance from anyone internally who might be nervous or, you know, cautionary about her doing that. But for anyone who didn't stand in the way or who said yes and are supported, I'm very happy and thankful because it was a beautiful message. And a really important message. And she used her platform to share it.
You know, it's funny, Colin. We're having fun. Just laugh. Hey, pull my finger.
No.
Laugh. I need it. I need you to laugh so hard. Like the way I laugh when the doctor asked if I got pregnant on the way over to the clinic because I wasn't very far along. And that is one of my favorite jokes to this day. I love that joke. It's such a good joke. Not like a funny ha-ha joke, but like a funny you're not an awful person and your life isn't over now joke. The best kind. A honka honka. Good horn.
Good horn. Killer horn.
Woo! I'm not a clown. And in the waiting room.
They could have gone a very different way with this. And if she had just come out and said, I'm Cecily Strong and this is how I feel, that would have been powerful in and of itself. The fact that she wrapped it in this character and made it about the clown abortions and, you know, people bringing it up all the time, so she has to talk about it. And one in three clowns are going to have a clown abortion right at the height of everything that was happening with the Supreme Court and Roe v. Wade. It's so important, as you said, to talk about this stuff, whether or not you agree with it, to have this platform, to be on one of the biggest shows in television and be able to talk about this. And I find it so brave that she was able to do this. And I think it's something that's going to be talked about for a very long time.
I think so, too. It's a hot button. I look forward to when it's not a hot button and it's just what it is. Well, you know, woman's choice. Because once that day comes, I think we'll see more of this in the reels, like the, you know, celebratory stuff and in anything that recognizes great work. I think right now it maybe comes up as a quick visual. I don't think anyone quite yet wants to, you know, put that back on the air in any type of clip package, but I hope they will at some point be as brave as she was and own that.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to imagine the respect that she had on the show at the time, because somebody who's new or not as well regarded as Cecily is probably not going to get a piece like this on. To give her this 3 to 4 minutes to speak her truth, as you said, behind the veil of a clown, but you know what she's saying, is so important. And it's the only place on the show where you could do it too, on Weekend Update. So I applaud her for it too.
Yeah. And I'm not a starstruck person. And, you know, certainly if I ran into a Kristen Wiig or Kate McKinnon or Maya Rudolph and these types of incredible women, and the male, you know, Sudeikis and Will Forte and everyone, I would be very excited. I don't know that I have a real life conversational topic to connect with them on other than like, I love your work. Right. But if I ran into Cecily, I would want to high five her and hug her and thank her for all of the characters like Goober that she put on the air.
Yeah, she was the voice of the people a lot of the times. Another one that she did that I think spoke to all of us, at least most of us, when she came on the weekend that Obama was leaving office and Trump was going into office for the first time, she came out to sing To Sir With Love with Sasheer. The place we were all in as that was happening here in the U.S. Was not a good one. And we were all just melancholy and scared, and rightfully so. And for her to be able to come out and just sing for a couple of minutes to Barack Obama to say how much we appreciated all the things that he had done was really, really touching. Hallelujah by Kate gets a lot of the pub because of when it aired and the heightened reality of that point with, you know, Kate playing Hillary, but she came out as herself and sang that song. And I think that was really, really important in 2017.
Yeah. I mean, did she fight for that? Maybe. I'd like to think that if she needed to, that obviously she put her foot down and said, this is what's happening. And there's such powerful ways that she's getting these messages across while I'm sure playing within the system.
Right.
To Sir With Love. Yeah. Yeah, that's a beautiful song. Sidney Poitier, right? Like, let's sing that song. We all know what the heck it's about. Come on.
That's
we
right.
We all know.
Big picture of Obama behind them. I mean, you know, it was...
a coincidence.
Yeah, I don't know how that got there. Yeah, so I don't know. I think we've covered most of the main points. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to make sure we get to before we talk about her goodbye.
No, I mean, listen, I'll just say that I don't think that she was ever the cool one. And I'll use air quotes there. She was the real one.
Yeah.
And a lot of people probably chase cool because it's hot, but her ability to be real and in the moment and bring a lot of emotional depth is one of the ingredients in the recipe of that era that made it successful and made her so memorable and made us gush about her for the last 45 minutes, quite frankly.
Right. Do you think that she has earned a spot in the Mount Rushmore of female cast members in the history of SNL? That's a tough question. There's a lot of good people, including in her own cast.
Yeah. Okay. Are we playing by actual Mount Rushmore four people, or are we just saying that one of the best? Because that's difficult if it's four people.
That's difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. But listen, is she Hall of Fame material? Can I swear? Fuck yeah. 100%. And I think she's almost such a steady Eddie that you're like, oh, she's good. And you're like, no, she's fucking great.
Yeah.
She's absolutely great. And, you know, there were some characters that 80 and others did that at times were more silly and memorable, but that shouldn't take away from the quality and the depth and the beauty and all of the amazing performance qualities that she brought to the show. I think she was almost just so reliable that it's easy to be like, she's almost table stakes, right? Like, oh yeah, Cecily, she's great.
Right.
No, she's absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. And she should host soon. You're right. So let's manifest it right now.
Yes, let's make that happen. So as I referenced, we do get an ending. So she doesn't come back to season 48 until a few episodes in. She was doing a one-woman show. in New York, and we thought we'd have her for the rest of the season. There was a lot of talk that this would be it for her. I know at the SNN, we found out that morning, and it was a scramble to the Christmas show. She was going to be out. This was her last episode. Austin Butler, she had had a tremendous few episodes back at the show. Really big show with Steve and Marty the week before. So we're wondering what's going to happen. Is she going to get a big send-off? Well, she gets two big ones. You mentioned Kathy Ann. She gets to do that one more time at the desk, and they even put up a picture of what she looked like when she started, and they show a picture of her and Jost at the update desk as themselves. But her big moment is Blue Christmas with Austin Butler. What do you remember about that? What were the feels that you had for that?
Yeah, her swan song moment, surrounded by castmates, which is beautiful, doing a casual, I'm not going to sing, and then obviously launching into Blue Christmas, but with tears in her eyes. Oh, and that she's singing with Elvis, you know, whatever. He was still doing Elvis at that time, wasn't he?
Yes.
I think that memory lives rent-free in every SNL nerd's heart.
Yeah. It was so beautiful. As you said, she's getting emotional, and I think we all were. And, you know, everybody has their role on the show, especially when the cast is this big. And she was the voice of the people, I think, a lot of the time. She's also the emotional center, you know, where I think with Kate and Adi, you didn't necessarily feel like you knew them as a person. They were buried behind characters a lot of time. And we've mentioned a lot of Cecily characters tonight. But with some of the other stuff that she did, you almost felt like you knew her more as a person, whether or not you actually did.
Absolutely. And that's why I talk about, if I met her, I feel like I'm meeting a friend and not a celebrity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think I would feel the same way. So this brings an end to an unbelievable career. 11 seasons on the show. Just from start to finish, is a star of the show. Kirsten, what do you want to say to the SNL Hall of Fame voters and people around the water cooler for your final pitch for Cecily into the SNL Hall of Fame?
Cecily Strong. Only she could make a clown, a drunk, and a right-wing lunatic feel weirdly relatable. Her final weekend update sketch had more emotional range than a lot of the Oscar reels that you see. She is a standout among fantastic sketch comedians because exactly what you said, her emotional range and depth that she brings to all her characters, her commitment to the craft, the fact that she's a triple threat, and that she is so confident in her convictions that it made for really smart, beautiful performances that anyone could laugh to at any point. They're really timeless in that way. I don't know how you wouldn't vote for her. I think if anyone thinks they don't want to vote for her, I'll meet you in the schoolyard at 3 p.m. because she's an absolute no-brainer for me for Hall of Fame. Hands down. And I'm going to manifest right now that she comes back and she hosts and Dochi is the musical performer, because that would be an incredible show to have two kick-ass females like that just own that SNL stage and ride it all the way into Sunday.
So there's that. That was our good friend Kirsten Rajala talking about Cecily Strong, just in case you fast forward the conversation to just hear me do the recap. I understand that there's precious few of you who do that, but in the case you do, I need to make that recap situation. So what do you think? Did Kirsten paint a good picture of Cecily Strong? I think so. Where I struggle, though, is Kate McKinnon did not get in on her first ballot, which is baffling to me. She is on the female Rushmore of SNL cast members. Maybe overall, she was that strong a presence on the show. Maybe I'm crazy. Send me an email, thesnlhalloffame@gmail.com. Tell me if I'm crazy or if it's a lunatic you're looking for. I'd love to know. Let's now go to one of Cecily's, you know, one of my favorite characters, I suppose. It was a Weekend Update character, and it's Girl You Wish You Didn't Talk To at a Party. So let's go to that now and get a taste of Miss Cecily Strong.
You hadn't started a conversation with at a party.
It is very good to be back.
Well, it's nice to see you.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the government's response to this outbreak?
Honestly, this whole Qdoba virus is inexcusable, okay? It's disrespectful, and it's been blown so out of abortion. Like, Michael, I'm sorry, you don't think there's any misogyny in calling it the Wuhan virus and not the man virus?
I think it's the Wuhan.
Wow, and you're just gonna do the voice.
No! Wuhan is the name of the province.
Okay, let's do a quick science experience. Open your mouth really wide.
What? No.
I'm gonna put my whole hand in.
Oh, no, you're not. Please, keep your hands to yourself.
Wow, okay, I'm sorry. Suddenly I'm Harvey Einstein. Michael, you need to wake up. Open your eyes and your ears and your mouth and let me put my hand
no.
in.
No!
Colin would let me.
Yeah, but I'm a freak.
All right, let's change the subject. What do you think about the Democratic candidates?
This whole thing is ribbed for no one's pleasure. And I'm sorry I'm not just following all the lepers and jumping off a cliff, okay? It's like everyone wants socialism now, but how did that work out for Vuvuzela? Loud. I mean, like, there are newborn babies who can't even read or write, Michael. Meanwhile, the Brazilian rainforest is burning. It's like, yeah, if you keep waxing, it's gonna burn.
Okay, so what do you think the solution is?
It's a bubble standard, Michael. Like, why do we even have a two-party system? Like, why can't we just have one party and not have to miss the other one and give, like, everyone major homo?
You mean FOMO.
You mean FOMO.
Cinda! That's my friend Cinda. We're supposed to, like, charge the stage at a Biden rally later tonight to tackle his wife for dairy.
What?
Oh, I just matched with Julian Assange and Raya. Anyway, the point is, people are sick of the hypocrisy, Michael. Maybe stop watching cable news 28/7 and actually do something.
Like what?
Look, I have been spending a lot of time with Joaquin Phoenix recently, okay? I wrote his speeches for the Oscars, Golden Gloves, and the NAMBLAs. So maybe stop letting cows fly private planes to Palm Springs. And I'm sorry, John Jr. can, like, run the Trump company, but Hunter Biden can't even work as a barista? That's necrophiliaism, Michael.
All right, just tell us one practical thing you want people to do.
I'm trying, but you have to let me put my hand in your mouth.
Stop touching me.
Wow, everyone's, like, so sensitive. It's like, what, just because I have a high fever and I'm coughing all the time and I have diarrhea, like, that means I shouldn't go to parties?
Yes, you should not even be here.
Fine. What if I wear a mask?
Yeah, well, okay, that would be a start.
Okay, here it is.
Oh, my God. Girl at a party, everybody.
Don't get on the top.
Oh, man.
I'm Michael Che.
I'm a freak. Good night.
Yeah. Yeah, that hits the spot. That hits the spot. That's a great character. And right off the bat, the tongue twisters, I suppose, the wordplay, is right there. It's in your face, and it's really freaking good. It's really good. So listen to Kirsten, listen to Bill, listen to Matt, and use your unlimited ballots this year to elect Mayor Cecily Strong. Progress is her middle name. That's what I've got for you this week. Next week on the program, we have got the Don Pardo Awards, and you're going to be joined by the dream team of myself, Matt Ardill, and Bill Kenny as we unveil the Don Pardo Award winner or winners and discuss that sequence. That will also be when voting opens for the season 7 class. You get unlimited votes this year, as I mentioned, and you'll have about 13 or 14 days to vote until we do a live finale and we bid adieu to the SNL Hall of Fame. I've got some C4. I've got some TNT. We're going to blow this sucker to the sky. So there's that. Now, if you would do me a favor and on your way out, as you walk past the Weekend Update exhibit, turn out the lights, because the SNL Hall of Fame is now closed.
Thanks for listening to the SNL Hall of Fame podcast. Make sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social media at SNLHOF. This is Kirk Lane saying, see you next week.